Hello, listeners out there. Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. I'm your bewildered host, Mike Buongiorno. Bewildered because I just, in the last 48 hours, watched the first three Jurassic Park movies, and about one-third of that experience was good.
I sort of did them over the course of about a week. All five.
All five. Let me say a welcome to my guest. You know him from the Ready Player One episode. He's sort of our resident Spielberg expert.
Yeah. I can go with that.
Yeah, you're a Spielbergologist. Since the last show, you got married.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How's it working out so far? Good?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I'm back in school yet again.
So that's how it goes.
I've spent more time with my classmates than I have with my wife. It's unfortunate, but you know.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
Look, what are you going to do?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's Mike Fischetti.
Glad to be back. Welcome back.
Welcome back. The listeners loved the Ready Player One episode.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, I didn't hear anything, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just kidding. We don't have any listeners.
I listen. And even then, it's every now and then.
There you go.
Well, it's also because, I don't know, sometimes I look and I'm just like, I don't know what any of these things are.
Especially with the mini-sode, sometimes it's, you know.
The one mini-sode you did last week was very good.
Which one was that?
The interview with...
Kat Kalamea.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that one.
There's all sorts of fun stuff coming up, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
All right, so let's talk about Jurassic Park.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Before we get into the minutiae, can you give me a countdown of your least to your most favorite?
Jurassic Park,
yeah.
Lost World, JP3, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom at the bottom.
Okay.
That's just straight down.
For me, it's Jurassic Park, Fallen Kingdom, Jurassic Park 3, Jurassic World, and then at the very bottom, Lost World.
I love you. You're insane, but I love you.
Let's go in order now. We both agree to Jurassic Park.
Well, I was going to say, wait. Why don't we, just for the sake of the listeners, let's start with 5. Let's start with Fallen Kingdom and work backward.
I'll do that.
So that way, you guys will definitely end on a happy and high note.
Yeah. and we could start off with the most current one.
Yeah.
So Fallen Kingdom, what did I like about it? The thing about the first Jurassic Park, the original Jurassic Park, mm-hmm. that I think is a real accomplishment is that Spielberg was able to have moments of awe.
Mm-hmm.
We're awestruck. These are, you know, there's the famous Brontosaurus moment where Alan Grant.
Brachiosaurus.
Sorry.
I'm going to. Forgive me.
No,
I'm,
do that.
I'm a dinosaur nerd. Like, I'm going to be nitpicky about that.
Did I have a completely wrong name, or is it just called something different?
No, it's a Brachiosaurus. It's just, you're just using the wrong name. It's a Brachiosaurus.
Okay. Is there such thing as a Brontosaurus?
For a long time, what we thought of as a Brontosaurus was actually an Apatosaurus, but with the wrong head on it.
Uh-huh.
And then, sort of after it had become kind of like known in popular culture, like people automatically thought of Brontosaurus, what they were really thinking of was like Apatosaurus or an Apatosaurus with a Camarasaurus head on it. Like, wow. It's not...
So you really know your dino shit.
Yeah. I do.
Did you know that the mythology of the Cyclops came from people finding fossils of Triceratops and looking them upside down. I didn't think that the nose cavity was an eye socket.
I've heard in some places that it's like it's a mastodon, depending on how you're holding it. And, you know, if it flips upside down, yeah, it's kind of the same thing.
I'll buy that.
Crack looks more like the eye socket for a cyclops.
Well, getting back to my point.
Yeah, okay.
There are those moments. The moment when Alan Grant and Ellie and the nameless blonde driver and Jeff Goldblum, Ian Malcolm, see the dinosaur for the first time. And we, the audience, are kind of seeing CGI for the first time. Not really, but
the first time
in a real bravado way. There's awe there.
Yes.
And then in so many other movies, they didn't try to do too much awe. They just went with the scary moments.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Spielberg was good in that first movie to have some scary moments and some awe-inspiring moments.
Yes.
I felt like Fallen Kingdom, which I'll call it Fallen Kingdom because the names are so confusing.
Yeah, that's fine.
Fallen Kingdom, the one that just came out, the second Jurassic World, was able to achieve awe in a way that I don't think has been achieved since the first movie.
My problem is that I think the film is such a convoluted mess and characters don't act like human beings from the start that I can't even enjoy or revel in some of the wonder or awe-striking moments because it's just like there's nothing there to support them. It's hollow.
Well, what are your problems with the characters?
There is like not one decision made by the characters throughout the film that feels like a decision a human would make.
I don't necessarily like these characters because I didn't like Jurassic World. It's my second to last favorite. So I don't like Chris Pratt because he's sort of like 20% Alan Grant, 20% Ian Malcolm, 60% Indiana Jones.
I was going to say, like he's like a diet Indiana Jones.
Yeah, and so I never liked that. And Bryce Dallas Howard, I like her better in this one, but I don't like her character.
Well, you're right about that.
Yeah.
I did like her better in this film. However, though, like, it is like she's two different characters.
Yeah.
Like, she has completely 100% changed since the last one.
Yeah, yeah. She's so, like, uptight business lady in the first one.
She's like Ian Malcolm says, oh, went from capitalist to naturalist in
2 years. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She certainly did do that. I was thinking to myself today, one way you could rank these movies is...
Yeah.
On a scale from how cute to how annoying the children characters are. Because there's children in all of them.
Ooh.
Whether or not they deserve to be children in those movies.
Ooh.
Oh, I should say there's going to be spoiler alerts all over this. So if you haven't seen Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom or any of these movies, this is not the podcast for you to listen to. Go watch them and come back.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, back to the program. The little clone girl I thought was adorable. I liked her. Whereas the two shitty boys from the last movie, oh. I hated them. I was actively wanting dinosaurs to eat them.
Okay, if you want to rank this based on children characters...
We don't have to. It was just notion I had.
No, because that's funny, because like, I'm just... Like, it came right into my head, just like, of course, first Jurassic Park. Lex and Tim.
Great. OG.
I got to be honest, Eric from JP3, really not that bad.
He's doing something in the plot. He's not just
along
for the ride.
Yeah, and he feels like how a kid would act around dinosaurs. Like, there's the wonder and there's the fear, but like, it's never too much.
I don't know. It's a little silly. It's a little Jumanji.
He's
supposed to be there for 8 weeks and he's got T-Rex urine and Alan Grant goes, how'd you get this?
At least he's smart. At least there's something there.
I mean, well, at least he's part of the plot. As much as I love part one and it is my most favorite, even Tim and Lex in part one, the way they're introduced in one shot where they're like, Grandpa, and it's like, whoa, why would this be the weekend for Grandpa? It's almost like, throw him in.
Okay, well, I mean, there's this I only really figured out yesterday, and this is a super nerd point.
Go for
it. Guess there was at some point, there was foot, you know, they must have either deleted the scene or they cut out the dialogue, definitely. So I was watching behind the scenes footage of Spielberg directing the scene from the first Jurassic Park where the cars first pull up and they're getting in for the tour. So originally the opening of that scene is all the adults walk outside and Hammond tells them their parents are getting a divorce. So I'm keeping them here for the week, you know, for like the weekend.
It's funny because they went back to that 9 more times.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's
I was like, oh, so you skipped it then and then you came back.
Yeah, actually, one of the notes, I watched Jurassic Park 3 this morning, and one of the notes I made was, what's with this parent trap bullshit? Yeah, we got divorced because we had fundamental problems. We grew apart as people. But I tell you, when you run away from a family of raptors that you've stolen their egg, you grow back together.
Yeah, you really do. You really. Okay, so we'll get to that because I want us to. All right, so let's get back to Fallen Kingdom. So Fallen Kingdom.
Let's get back to Fallen
Kingdom.
Stick
with that.
Let me put it this way. I can understand someone hating it because in some ways to me it felt a little bit like The Last Jedi. It was weird. It was way different. The ending is something that divides a lot of people. For me, I thought this is a Planet of the Apes movie.
Oh, okay.
And to me, in my head, if you go from part one to Fallen Kingdom, and you take what Malcolm is saying in part one about this is going to be bad. You don't know it yet, but it's going to be bad. Mm-hmm. And then go right to Fallen Kingdom, and now we have a clone human. To me, those two work together as could be one and two without the three in the middle that are just spinning their wheels.
So Patrick H. Willems, who does a lot of great video essays, he made the same point. What he liked about the film was, you're right, that it's the first film ultimately of consequence within the series.
Yeah,
that actually,
something happens.
Yeah, that actually like advances.
The world changes. We're going to have a world with dinosaurs in it now. And I'm so excited for sequels that might come now.
So how much do you know about the original Jurassic 4 script?
Not that much. I know a lot about the original Jurassic 3 script where they were like talking dinosaurs and dinosaurs.
That is basically...
Oh, that script played around with for a long time?
Exactly, yeah. They were going to be militarized, talking raptors who could hold guns. They had, like, human hands.
Sounds stupid, right? But at the same time...
But that's where we're going.
If you're bored with it...
That's exactly where it's going.
That is where it's going.
In this movie, what pissed me off about it was that in this movie, they introduced a character who, granted, they didn't really develop.
Silent partner that was never there, but now we have to pretend was there?
No, not the human retcon. The dinosaur veterinarian.
I actually liked her. And
I did.
The other
I liked
boy.
Her, too. Oh, see, I hated the boy.
There's always these archetypes of, like, the not people, the people you don't care about, and those people are, like, Vince Vaughn in part two, or Billy from part three, whoever the fuck that was. So I think as, like, the extras, I was like, okay, I kind of like these two at least a little bit.
See, I didn't like the guy because he just was scared of everything. But the girl who was the dinosaur veterinarian, that really interested me, and that was what made me really sad. I was like, you know, the movie that you guys should have made, Jurassic World, I think, could have reasonably ended with the park not getting destroyed. They contain the Indoraptor. And so the park remains open. Mm-hmm. I think there's something interesting to be said for a movie about a paleo veterinarian. They kind of had it in this movie with the scene where she's removing the bullet from the Velociraptor. And even there, I was like, oh, there's potential. There's something really good here. But you guys, you didn't get it here. And I just feel like there's a way to do it. I feel like it's a missed opportunity because now, for all intents and purposes, like, I don't think they can sort of go back to that well.
We're at this place now where there are dinosaurs in the world. And I would like not a reboot, but I'd like us to move away from the Chris Pratt character. You could easily now do a series of sort of standalones, kind of like Planet of the Apes movies, where you kind of have different characters in each one, but what's progressing is the dinosaur takeover or whatever it is, whatever their major plan is.
Yeah, I mean, it would actually, what would be really interesting is if they could just, like, okay, the lesson of Jurassic Park has been learned. Like, okay, don't clone dinosaurs, but that's too late. The genie's out of the bottle. Why don't they basically do what Disney Pixar failed to do? So The Good Dinosaur, when that came out a few years ago, probably the worst Pixar film I've ever seen.
Yeah, oh God, is it so...
Oh, it's so bad.
The only thing I like about that movie is that video that went viral last week of the little girl crying watching it.
Oh, no, I didn't
see
that.
Did you see it?
No.
Adorable. It's just like 2-year-old and she's crying and the mother's like, what's wrong? And she's like, the dinosaur lost his mommy. If this little girl was sitting next to me in the theater, I would have enjoyed it through her, but I was just bored out of my mind. I was like...
Yeah, I mean, but their whole original premise was, like they say at the beginning, like, okay, what if the asteroid misses?
Yeah.
And the dinosaurs live on and live on to interact with humans. The amazing thing about animation is because they take so long to make, part of the reason why there are a lot of really good animated films is because they remake that film for 2 years straight.
And you're not even, whereas we just run into things, I say we, like I make live action films, where people who make live action films just sort of run into it. And
we'll
write on the fly. They have to have a good script.
Yeah.
That's why it took, 32 years to make The Incredibles 2 or something?
And even then,
grandkids.
And even then, it was just the same movie as the first.
You know, I didn't even see it.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's it's good. I think it's a good movie. It's not a great movie. I also, truthfully, like
enough.
I do not love
Micho.
The first Incredibles.
I'm with you. I don't love the first Incredibles.
I think it is good. I just don't think it is a masterpiece. I think people treat it as a masterpiece, and I don't necessarily agree.
All right, let's go back
to let's go back to Jurassic Park.
Fallen Kingdom. Do you dislike the ending or like the ending?
I mean, I just didn't care for the whole thing. Okay. So, I mean, like, look, the ending, it is what it is. If they come up with some interesting thing to do, like you're saying, with the dinosaurs living in our world, maybe then it'll be all right.
The things that stand out to me the most as, like, I really liked it were the ending, the clone girl, because to me that's like there's a step in this narrative. And I really liked the opening. It was, I think it was the scariest opening of any Jurassic Park movie.
It was a good,
it almost was like it had some Jaws vibes, which I think was on purpose. I was genuinely, maybe it's because I'm one of these people that has fear of the ocean. So, like, I could get the creeps just by looking at images of the ocean.
I was
going to
say, I love the ocean.
The ocean is a hellscape that has Cthulhus and Cloverfields in it, and I don't want any part of that. So, the opening terrified me.
The ocean is fine. Just watch out for jellyfish and sharks.
So, but you had already been tuned out by... Well, what do you think of Clone Girl?
It makes sense that eventually there would have at least been some talk about, like, cloning
humans.
It's
a better next step than the Indominus Rex, where we're like, we're making our own dinosaurs. To me, it's a better moral step, if we're making it like a morality tale, to go from dinosaurs to your loved daughter who you lost. Let's get to something we agree on.
Yes.
Jurassic Park.
Is one of the greatest movies ever made.
Really? Do you, you have it on your list of the greatest
Genuinely, it is one of the best films ever made. It is one of my favorite films of all time. It's a masterpiece. Anyone who says that it's second-tier Spielberg, I think you're out of your mind.
Oh, it's not second-tier Spielberg at all.
It is top-tier Spielberg. It is a film that is about wonder and awe.
Yeah.
It also has those sequences of sheer terror, but it never feels cynical. It never feels...
Right. Even his dinosaurs feel like they are animals
that is
key. Attacking what they don't know, whereas in some of the later movies, they're monsters that want to eat you. And it's like... Like, I was just watching 3, and I thought... It seemed like they were, like, so hunting the people. I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right. And I would even say The Lost World treats the dinosaurs as animals.
Yeah.
These are creatures who, just like if you went outside... And, you know, there was a dog. Maybe the dog will bark. Maybe the dog will recoil.
Right.
Maybe the dog will just walk up to you. And,
you can
pet it. Animals have these sort of different varied reactions. They aren't always looking to attack and kill.
Right. Whereas in these movies, it seems like if they are carnivores, they're monsters. They're going to kill you. And if they're herbivores, they're sweet. Those are the nice ones.
And not even just sweet. They're just sort of like there.
Doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're kind of Flintstone dumb. Yeah. Like, they're just sort of there.
Right. But did you have any feels when we saw the Brachiosaurus die on the island? When they were... To me, that was a sad moment.
I know what you
mean,
That was
a good analog to Alan Grant seeing it for the first time. It was like, fuck, look what happened.
I think that's also part of the reason I didn't like the movie, was just because I love dinosaurs so much. I don't like the idea of watching them get killed so mercilessly and cynically.
So you were against Dr. Ian Malcolm, who said we should just let the volcano kill them.
Yeah. And by the way, like, I'm not a plot hole person. Like, I kind of hate when people are like, oh, plot hole. But I was just very confused when they're like, we have this island that's going to be a sanctuary for the dinosaurs. I was like, you have Isla Sorna.
Yeah.
87 miles away. That's where you keep the other dinosaurs.
Yeah. What happened to that?
Yeah.
It's like they just completely forgot about it. Even though it's a part of 2 and 3. I forgot that 3 is on the same island as 2. It's on the second island.
It is, and it looks like it's shot on an entirely different island.
Oh, yeah, well. That's a whole other. I had a really big aha moment as I rewatched them. Because I always read the theme of the Jurassic Park series as being similar to maybe like Frankenstein or Dr. Faustus, the idea of, like, playing God will bring your damnation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what happens in each film, it's not that. What brings damnation is capitalizing it. It's greed and money.
Yeah.
It's not that Hammond did it. It's that he made a park.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was like, you know, if you told me we can clone dinosaurs and bring them back, you can make a nature preserve.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's basically kind of, you know, if you really want to, it's a monorail. It's like, if, for those of you, if you've ever been to the Bronx Zoo and you go to the Asia section in the Bronx Zoo, it has this wonderful monorail that takes you around into all these exhibits and you can see the animals fairly close. I think if you did that with dinosaurs, you brought them back to life and then you did that. Right. I don't think there's a moral question.
Nothing bad would happen. There'd be no plot to the first movie if it weren't for the greed of Nedry.
Yeah, honestly, Nedry's the one who screws everything up.
Absolutely. It would have been, if he hadn't done what he did, it would have just been boring for the protagonist because no dinosaurs would have come out. What he did was turn off the gates and try to make extra money on it. Even the beginning of Lost World is these, like, rich assholes eating on the beach. It's always...
And essentially, Lost World's also the fact that InGen is bringing the dinosaurs to civilization.
Right, absolutely.
For an arena show. Again, it is, like you said, like it's a capitalist...
Yeah,
it's all capitalist ideas.
It's like the combination of playing God and our greed is what seems to do it. Greed never works in these movies. If you stop and try to get the egg, you're dead. If you want to get that tooth like the guy in the new movie... Whenever somebody in these movies goes, maybe I'll get a little something on the side, they're dead.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know, like, the most horror movie cliche ever, too.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's a huge horror sci-fi.
Oh, absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, one, you know, you could gush over it. It's sort of perfect. I made a bunch of notes because there were things I hadn't watched I hadn't watched it in so long. There's a real anti-technology theme, like Alan Grant hates computers. And the little girl Lex, I did not remember this. She refers to herself as a hacker.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what that means. I guess it seems like there is in that first one the sort of combo of, you know, digital or electronic technology versus, you know, biology. I don't know. It's an interesting thing that I had not noticed. I also was shocked at how little Ian Malcolm is in it.
Yeah,
he's really not. Is out. You can see where he was going to die and they kept him in the movie.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they did.
I'm glad they did, too.
I think he's, yeah.
You remember him as being a bigger part of the second and third act, which he kind of isn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, yeah, he really does just sort of... Once he gets injured, like, he's out.
He's just quipping. He's just there to quip.
Yeah. This isn't a nitpick, but this is just what I think is funny. And this is the thing, like, even about, like, writing good dialogue... They're in the bunker waiting for Samuel L. Jackson to come back. And Ellie comes out, something's wrong, something's not right.
Yeah.
And Hammond goes, it's just a delay. That's it. It's all a delay. When they opened Disneyland in 1956, nothing worked. Yeah. But John, the Pirates of the Caribbean breaks down. The pirates don't eat the tourists. So that line is amazing.
That's very funny.
Disneyland opened in 1955, 1956. And Pirates of the Caribbean doesn't open till like 67.
Fuck Jurassic Park.
No. But I think that's the interesting thing about even like creating good dialogue is just like people say stuff that's not true all the time.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, that I always thought was interesting. When I heard it this time and I realized, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, that's like when you find out that the equation Scarecrow says in Wizard of Oz when he gets his brain is incorrect. It really changes your reading of that scene.
Talk about changing your reading. I just heard this really nice feminist reading of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
In that, because if you think about it, all the dinosaurs are female.
Yes.
And things only...
Well, they begin that way, at least.
Yeah, and the idea is, like, everything starts going wrong once, like, sort of... Like, everything that goes wrong because of men.
Yeah.
In that it's Nedry, and then it's that the dinosaurs change sex.
And Ellie kind of makes that joke when she says, woman will inherit the earth.
Yeah. There's a whole feminist reading of it that I actually kind of like.
That is kind of cool. When you think about it, you know, that T-Rex...
The T-Rex is presumably
female.
That's
a female, yeah.
Presumably. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, that's the thing about the species changing sex from male to female in a single-sex environment. I assume there's only one T-Rex on the island at that point.
Yeah. Right. There are holes you could poke in things. I totally forgot about the lysine deficiency.
It's one of those, like, I'll buy it, John Hammond. You said it, I'll buy it.
Speaking of John Hammond, he is one of my favorite characters in the first movie. Every villain, and John Hammond's not even a villain, but let's just call him a villain for the sake of argument. Every villain after him has been mustache twirly evil guy or evil greedy guy. Mm-hmm. Hammond, like the dinosaurs themselves, creates the trouble, but he's a good person. He cares about things. He cares about people. He really wants to make little kids happy. He's got some Walt Disney in him.
Yes.
You know, he, in some ways, he's played by Richard Attenborough. And mm-hmm. so in some ways, he's sort of channeling his brother, David Attenborough, who does nature documentaries. And, you know, like his whole speech where he's talking about the flea market. Not the flea market.
The flea circus.
The flea circus, you know, while they're eating the ice cream. If we're talking just Spielberg, I'd put that up with Quint's speech from Jaws. Like, and him too. That's sort of when Quint goes from a villain to like, oh, a more complex person.
Yeah. I love Hammond. Because like, you're right. Yeah, he does have that little bit of Walt Disney in him. He does have that showman in him. He does have that sort of privileged look at the world. You know, how
he's
can
all
we...
about money.
But here's the difference. He spends money.
Yes. He says more than twice in the first movie, we spared no expense. He says that a bunch of times.
There's a difference between greedy people who are just trying to, like, constantly make profit that gets bigger and bigger and not really doing anything with it, but just other than, like, the satisfaction of making it.
Right.
He's not just cheaping out on everything. Like, no, like, he spends the money because he knows the better quality will make this experience better for others.
Right.
It's about other people's experiences, not his.
Right. The other villains, whether they were people working for new parks or they were people who wanted to sell the dinosaurs to whoever for money, for, to the military, they all did not care. Whereas in the dinner scene where they're in that very interesting interior where there's like the black table and then like the screens all around them. It's a very cool looking scene. You could see his like ideology is very positive. You know, he's like, this is something amazing. And, you know, and then he has a great line. The only person who agrees with me is the blood sucking Lord.
Yeah, no, it's like, I don't believe this. I don't believe this. You're meant to come down here and defend me against these characters. And the only one on my side is the blood sucking lawyer. I've seen the movie enough times that I have it pretty much committed to memory.
Absolutely. So. Two things. One,
Alan
Grant doesn't go until he's told he'll have his dig financed. Mm-hmm. Again, the theme of you go for the money, you're going to get in trouble. Same thing happens to him in 3.
Yeah.
And there's an image that jumped out at me as a perfect image for the movie, which is when the Raptors break in to the control room, there's a moment where there's a projector that's on a raptor. So on the raptor's skin projected, you see a bunch of binary code ones and zeros.
No. It's TGAC.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. When they're crawling through the ceiling at the end, the raptor looks up, and it's just because of the light coming down through the grates, the grating is TGAC, which is the code for the four chemicals inside DNA.
My point remains, which is, it's the idea, whether it be, well, I thought it was binary code, which is the DNA of a digital language. It's still like the code is on him, the way it's, you know, like, it's the only time in the movie where both types of technology, wet and dry, it really drives the point home in a visual sense. Like, the raptor with the code on him, to me, it was such a perfect image.
Yes.
For what the movie is about, or what the movie is afraid of.
Yeah.
You think about when it came out, 1993, after watching it and watching the explanation of DNA in the beginning, I had to look up the facts on the O.J. Simpson trial. It's 2 years later. So this is probably the first time the public hears the word DNA. And then it sort of makes its way into the zeitgeist during the O.J. trial.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay. So the idea of DNA had been around since, you know, Watson and Crick, and I'm sure it was taught in science classes, and I'm like, you're right, like, people probably, like, learned it and maybe forgot about it.
Right.
But, like, yeah, DNA as something almost useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, like, it could start here, and then really, when the O.J. Simpson case rolls around, then people hearing it being used as evidence, that
supposedly,
you know,
the prosecutors had based a lot of their testimonial on DNA, but they were getting sort of feedback that the jurors were not understanding it, so they sort of changed gears a little bit, which is funny because now we would totally, if you tell me the DNA is what it is, I would believe you.
I did a project on DNA evidence and the law.
Oh, yeah, really?
In 7th grade as part of the National History Day Fair. When I went to the state competition, we made it to states, we're explaining our project, and the judges stop us about 3/4 of the way in and go, DNA fingerprinting. Is that like your fingerprints? This was like 2000, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
CSI was brand new.
Yeah.
We actually put CSI in our project. Mm-hmm. But, like, that was the thing. Was, like, even in 2000, 2001, like, people really didn't know what it was. And it's amazing because it had been used in court cases for a number of years by that point. And it's well past OJ. So it's just interesting. Like,
yeah,
something that we really do believe pretty easily today.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much you followed this, and this is getting off track a little bit, but they finally found the Golden State Killer by his third or fourth cousin, who never even met him, did one of those like 23andMe things.
Oh, okay.
And they hit a match, and through that they were able to like draw the family tree, and then they went to the suspect's house and like I think from his garbage got like a cup and then like retested his DNA, and they're like, this is it. This is the guy. So,
oh, wow.
We might be at the verge of like catching, he's probably dead of old age, but we're at the verge of figuring out who the Zodiac Killer was, who all of these people were through DNA. So even now it's like, it's opening up because what's happened with the 23andMe thing, which people are looking up their genealogy.
Yeah.
We're building a bank, and they tell you even in the thing, like, look, we're not going to sell your code, but the cops can look at it.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
If you plan on being a serial killer,
they
maybe
can
don't
subpoena
do this.
It. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So anyway,
let's
move on to
your least favorite, but my second favorite.
My least favorite, which is crazy because anyone who listens to the show knows how much I love Jeff Goldblum. But God, this movie's such a slog. It's such a
I thought it moved. Oh, so yeah, I thought it moved.
I did not think it moved, and I also think he's just being Quippy McQuipper. He has no agency in it. Mm. I feel like he's making no moves. He's not doing anything. It's
You're
like,
right.
Even though he's in it, he's basically our protagonist. He's not, not doing anything.
He's reactive.
Yeah.
As a character, he's entirely reactive in the film. As much as I like it, I do admit, like, it has a number of problems. It was fascinating when I watched it this time. I sat back and I said, you know, this is a miniseries of a movie. This is something that if you took 6-7 hours, I think you could tell a really cool and compelling story because there's so many characters, there's a couple different, you know, storylines going on that you need the time to make it work. The 2 hours that they have is just, it's not enough.
Yeah. It's got a lot of the ingredients of the first movie, but none of it works. Like, to me, Julianne Moore, I don't feel like there's a character there. Vince Vaughn, he's supposed...
Vince Vaughn really has no reason to be there, yeah.
Right, but then he ends up being like a Greenpeace kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But him, the little girl is cute. She's not annoying.
I was going
to
say...
All she's there to do is to do a ridiculous fucking gymnastics routine.
Let me be... Okay, so I remember I watched Lost World a few years ago, and I thought I was suddenly like, whoa, she's really annoying. But now when I watched it this time, I was like, she's not that bad. She really
isn't.
She's
not annoying.
Like,
she's
and even the gymnastics thing didn't bother. It was funny. Last time it bothered me. This time I'm like, oh, that really wasn't that.
It bothered me because it's like shot of a little girl cut to a 70-year-old stuntman in her clothes. See, that's the thing. Like, she wasn't annoying like the kids from...
Four.
From Four.
They're an abomination.
Yeah. But she was like nothing. To me, it all feels like there's no there. Like... Ian Malcolm's got nothing going on. We don't have Hammond. We have this not Hammond. We don't have Lex and Timmy. We have, I don't even remember her name. Maybe the best character in it, or the character who is a character most, is the bold, like, big hunter guy. And even he is like, I don't know. It just, to me, it feels very empty. I don't hate it. It just does so little for
me. Well, that's, you know, that's sort of why I was saying, like, this feels like a miniseries of a movie. Because, Pete Postlethwaite's character, Roland,
mm-hmm.
You're right, he is interesting. Amongst all these other characters, like, doesn't really have the time.
Yeah, he has an arc, at least.
Yeah, he has, there's an arc, and there's something interesting to be said for him.
Right.
Especially with his, like, last line, you know.
Malcolm is just like, oh, don't go. And, then he's there, and he's like, oh, I wish I weren't here. And then bad stuff
everyone's like, ooh, ah. And then later, there's running and screaming.
Even if you look at, like, Grant in Part 3, I think once he gets to the island, he's like, and once he meets up with Eric, he's doing stuff. Whereas I feel like Malcolm is always just, like, not wanting to be in the movie. He's just always like, oh, this sucks.
Well, that is the thing that I always found really weird is like, why did you choose Malcolm to be the I mean, like, I understand Michael Crichton sort of wrote that in his book, but even there, I'm like, dude, like, why Malcolm? Because Malcolm hates this whole thing. Like,
right.
He is automatically coming from this negative perspective, doesn't appreciate the dinosaurs at all. Like, as a kid, I didn't want to see Malcolm again. Like, I loved him, but, like, I didn't need to see him again. I want to see Dr. Grant.
Did Crichton write the Lost World book before the movie?
Yeah, and it was
so
also...
So he reconned his own book, because Malcolm dies in the first book.
Yeah. He actually, if I remember right, he starts the Lost World... It's Malcolm saying, like, you know...
You thought I was dead.
No, it's like, you know, the stories of my death have been highly exaggerated. And all right.
So he was... Crichton's always had, you know, half a foot in the movie industry anyway, so...
Yeah, no, he was... I mean, he was basically, like, forced to write The Lost World. Like, he didn't really want to. It was another instance where the two of them were like, we didn't really want to do anything else, but okay, I guess we have to. And that's the whole reason that in the Jurassic Park... that Spielberg has that shot. When Nedry's getting eaten by the Dilophosaurus, it pans down to the Barbasol
cream. Because
he's like, if I ever do a sequel, it's probably going to be about that shaving cream can.
Yeah.
And that's actually the kind of movie I think I would have rather saw. It was like the movie about... I know that they made it into a video game, but like still, like that's...
Okay.
That is interesting. The people that they send onto the island... The fence, I mean, that's interesting if you think about it, too, because the fences are operating and their security system's operating, but dinosaurs, some of them could be in paddocks, some of them are still free roaming.
Yeah.
And, like, there's no, you know...
That would be a better way to go.
And then also you could introduce all of the other dinosaurs that maybe, like, we didn't see, because if you really think about the first Jurassic Park, we see Brachiosaurus, Parasaurolophus at the beginning,
right.
Raptors, Dilophosaurus, T-Rex, Gallimimus, and a Triceratops. And if you look when Nedry's pulling out the DNA, there's the Metricanthosaurus. There's a whole bunch of dinosaurs on there that they didn't. Yeah. Stegosaurus, they didn't show.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, let's go down the directors. Steven Spielberg directed 1 and 2, right?
1 and 2.
Who directed 3?
Joe Johnston, director of The Rocketeer. It is still his best film and is still, in my opinion, one of the top 10 superhero movies ever.
Okay, interesting. And then 4 was Trevorrow?
4 was Trevorrow, and 5 was J.A. Bayona.
What else has he done?
Bayona, so I haven't seen any of his other works, but he did The Orphanage, he did A Monster Calls.
I saw those movies. Okay, so he does more like scary things.
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe the series would have been better if it were less franchised and more... Spielberg hands-on? Because it feels like he looked at what Lucas did with Empire and Jedi and it was like, yeah, like I did the first one and now I'm gonna let it go. And I felt like maybe if Spielberg had been more involved, it may have, I don't know, there'd be more of a consistency of where it's going.
It's weird because like he is and isn't involved at the same time, because he executive produces them. I know he
sort
of...
What does that mean? Like, I sometimes wonder, like, like, so, what about the Transformers movies?
It's funny.
Is Spielberg coming in and talking to people, or is he just go, use my name, bye?
Executive producer is exactly that. It's one of these titles where, you're right. Sometimes it is just like, I put my name on it, and, like, you'll give me some cash.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of
I'll
it.
Get you funding by putting my name on it.
Exactly. Like, there's, like, not much to it. But sometimes, like, executive producers can be... basically producers and
doing
like
the whole thing.
Really
you don't know
heavy
what
it
means.
It.
It's a vague title to have.
Yeah.
Like Stan Lee's always given an executive producer.
I mean, especially the Stan Lee thing is just weird because it's like, I know Stan Lee really helped start Marvel.
Right.
But like...
he's a mascot now. And
yeah.
I mean, he's sort of... And he's also, you know, he seems to be dealing with some sort of dementia. He's in his 90s. I mean,
yeah,
I,
he's
not
going
really
through a really rough
with,
patch.
Yeah.
So anyway...
even though it's at the bottom of my list, there's not like a hate for it. Mm. It's more like a big shrug to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually one of the first movies I remember feeling that way about. Because, I was a kid when it came out. I saw it in the theater. And I remember being like so excited for it. Because, of course, I loved the first one.
Yeah.
And I remember just being like, it was okay. Like, it was middling.
I think I just remember being a kid and like enjoying it. If anybody actually asked me, I probably would have had the comprehensive thought and said, I wasn't as good as the first one, but like I still enjoyed it because I got to see a bunch of dinosaurs. I got to see more dinosaurs than in the first one. My threshold as a child was just like, can you show me dinosaurs and can you show me more of them? That's all I was looking for. So that's why eventually, even when Jurassic Park 3 rolls around, and when I watched it this time, I was like, you know what I like about this movie? It's fast and there's a lot of dinosaurs in it.
Yeah, Jurassic Park 3 is 90 minutes.
It's
a real little...
It's not even 90 minutes.
Oh,
if
it's
you
not?
Well, okay. It's 90 minutes. It's 90 minutes with credits.
Right.
I watched it on my computer and so I remember like as it was ending I went to stop it and I was like hour 23.
Yeah.
Man, not even 90 minutes. Yeah. They just did it.
It's a little more movie in a way. And yeah. I think that works for it.
It was funny. I was like, there's no, okay, I'm just putting character and all that aside. Like, at the very least, this movie moves.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. It's almost like after the first 20 minutes, 25 minutes, the movie is just set pieces. It is a straight set piece movie.
Yeah.
Plane crashes, set piece. Escape from the Spinosaur, set piece. T-Rex Spinosaur fight, set piece. And it just keeps going.
Yeah, like, yeah. It sort of knows what it is more than I think Lost World knows what it is. I think if Lost World was tighter and shorter, it could have achieved that B-movie thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're officially talking about 3. So
Why not? Unless, do you have anything else you want to say about Lost World?
The only thing I want to say about Lost World is the T-Rex eats the dog, and I don't like when dogs die in movies.
I was going to say...
Actually, the whole ending is stupid, actually. You know,
I don't mind.
You know that it's based on a meeting where they go, no, be cool, a shot with him in front of buildings and him in a city. It reminds me of, like, Jason Takes Manhattan.
I mean...
oh, come on.
Well, dude, it's Steven Spielberg was like, I really like the original Lost World, the silent movie, and that has the Brontosaurus attacking London at the end.
Right.
I want to do that. And you know what? He's Steven fucking Spielberg. He gets to do that.
He does get to do it.
He gets to do that. I don't care.
But I don't know. I find that stupid. Maybe there'll be more of that in the continuing series. That one shot of the T-Rex roaring in front of a backdrop where we see in the distance skyscrapers.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, this is what this is all about. That one image. They wanted that in the trailer. And all of this is working backwards from that. All right, let's move on to 3, unless you have anything else to say about 2.
Let's move on to 3.
All right, 3.
Which
begins with, it says Jurassic Park, and then a claw comes. Uh-oh,
which
it's
is the
extreme!
Most, that is the most B-movie thing. That's like when you're watching Jaws 3, but it's Jaws 3D, and 3D comes right out at you from the middle of the screen. And by the way, Jaws 3D... probably the best of the sequels of the Jaws movies.
I would say 2, but I also would say that the drop-off is huge. It's like one of the best movies ever.
Yes.
And then, you know, we're just playing in the dirt and we're talking about which ones are better of 2 or 3 and fucking 4. God.
4 is still the...
We'll do another episode about...
Jaws, the NES game, is still the hardest game I've ever played and have not beaten... So Jurassic Park 3.
Well, you've got Alan Grant, who's
Which
the star
was,
of Jurassic Park.
I was so... That's the only
he's
thing I
back.
Think... That's what I think makes this movie... If anything makes this movie work, it's just the fact that he's there.
Yeah.
And I think it's because he has this character. Like, he brings all this extra stuff to it. It's a movie with some good actors in it. Like, William H. Macy and Taya Leone.
Yeah.
They're doing about as good of a job as you could expect with
they're
this material.
They're stupidly written characters.
Yeah.
But they're doing a good job for... those stupid characters.
Yeah, like they're not just, you know, mailing it in.
Yeah, and they're sort of John and Jane America in this world rather than, you know, they're a scientist or a military person. They're sort of what would a real person be like in a setting like that?
They're a hardware store owning family from Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I believe of William H. Macy.
Yeah, you believe that. You believe that, especially the mustache that he's got.
Oh, that mustache. Oh my God.
The beginning bums me out.
Yeah.
Because we see him with a little kid and we think like, oh, okay, he settled down after the first movie, he married Ellie, and then it's a misdirect because then you see her husband come in.
It's so stupid and unnecessary. And
like, why even have her in it? Like, I mean, I understand you want them back in it, but she does nothing in it. Later she calls the army to save him, which makes no sense.
No sense.
You have one phone call to make, why would he call her for her to call someone else?
How would she know that the river
means... Like, what does that mean?
That I'm on Isla Sorna.
Right. Why not say that one word? Why go river? Like, she's like, nah, but I got it. So she's there. We're sort of reintroduced to the characters, even though she's not going to be in the movie. And he says, I'm the last of my breed, which is sad.
Yeah.
It's a real bummer. We kind of feel like he has a surrogate father connection to Billy.
Yeah, which is...
He's like grad student, I guess.
It's weird. It's also... It's just bothersome that the whole point of the first movie was he learns to be a father, and presumably that's what Ellie is happy about, and now he will want to, like...
Right.
...settle down and make a breed of Dr. Grant.
Right. It's thematically interesting in the first movie where we're talking about cloning dinosaurs and we've got a man and woman in a relationship and they don't want to breed. She makes Lexi sit next to him and she goes, she thought it'd be good for you if I sat next to you. So yeah, he like, that's sort of the point of the first movie. You assume that, okay, now, you know, it seemed like them not having kids was the one thing holding up their relationship.
And the whole point was that he learns, and then they're going to go back and, like, have kids.
Yeah. So why did they do that? Why did they make that choice?
I have no... I honestly don't know. I'm sure it was something as stupid as, like, we would have had to, like, bring Ellie into the movie more.
But did she say no? I mean...
Well,
I
I'm wondering. I'm wondering if that's what it is, too.
Because
is it just
great
like
in the movie.
I was wondering, is it something she was, like... She couldn't do it because she had committed to another movie or something. Like, it was one of those, like, we have to make this thing sort of now or never. And, you know, it was one of those... And if they did, would the whole movie have basically been, instead of Taya Leone and William H. Macy being this, like, bickering couple, would it have been Sattler and Grant being the bicker, which I would never want to see anyway.
No, you don't want them to be bickering. You want them to be a team.
They're adorable.
Maybe there was a version of the script where it was their kid. Seems to make some sense, you know?
I'll have to look into that. My major memories of that movie were the summer or whatever leading up to it. I used to read a guy who ran a website, Dan's JP3 page.
Uh-huh.
And, like, he was the one who updated it, like, every day with news. A lot of it was, like, rumors and stuff. And I remember we were all excited because we all thought that this movie was going to feature a plesiosaur or a mosasaur.
I have no... Jurassic I can't World. Even my mind bring up what that looks like.
It's the underwater monster from Jurassic World.
Okay. That's not mosasaur. A megalodon?
No, Megalodon is basically a gigantic great white shark, like 60-foot great white shark.
You looking forward to the Meg?
I don't understand. Everybody is like, oh, this looks like so stupid. I was just like, no, this just looks stupid. I'm out.
It looks good stupid
keep
to
it.
Me.
Keep it.
No, it looks good stupid.
As the kids would say, keep it.
There's not much...
Well, nothing.
2-3, you know?
We got to see pterosaurs. I was very happy to see pterosaurs.
Which ones are the pterosaurs?
They're pteranodons. They're the ones that can fly.
Okay.
The pterodactyls. Okay. They're not actually dinosaurs, but it was cool to see them and, like, see them be so huge.
Were they, in the end of 3, when you see them flying, was that them trying to do what they do at the end of Fallen Kingdom? Because if they do, then they drop that.
From what I remember, like, remember I was talking before about the Jurassic Park 4 script that never came to be? You could probably still find it if you Google around.
Yeah.
Ain't It Cool News did a report on it. Somebody read the script and wrote about it. Mm. And it was basically that the movie opens with kids playing at a baseball field.
Sure.
And then the pterosaurs come down out of nowhere and, like, attack the game.
Okay.
These animals are out of containment now. They're starting to spread. What we're getting to now is what they were going to do in this other script. This is one thing about Hollywood, I'm sorry, that I just have to go off on this tangent. In these last 10, 15 years, something about Hollywood, like, I really don't understand, and this is very much in the last 10 to 15 years, is all of these drafts of scripts that were never made in the 90s are being the basis for the movies we see now. Jurassic Park 4 script that I was just telling you about, there are elements of it in Jurassic World, Jurassic World 2, and presumably what will be Jurassic World 3. Like, there's just elements of it that get sprinkled in all of them. Batman v Superman was supposed to be a movie by Wolfgang Peterson in, like, 97. I remember when they announced the title, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, I was like, why are they calling it Batman v... Like, why are they calling it Batman versus Superman?
Right. They're friends.
Yeah, like, or why not... Even if they are battling off, like, why not just Batman slash...
Right, right.
And I feel like it's because of this old script that they've pulled stuff from.
Right.
And we just see this over and over again, these older scripts that they never made, that they just sort of pull stuff from to make these newer films. And there's just almost a part of me, it's like, why don't you guys ever just start over fresh?
I think it's a matter of, we paid money for it.
So we're going to get our money's worth.
I really think that's the way they look at projects. Like, it's like a money pit. How much money are we putting into it?
Yeah.
Because as you're saying this, I'm thinking about the really corny scene in part 3 where Alan has the nightmare of the talking.
Alan.
Yeah. That has to be a remnant or maybe even just an in-joke of the original script for 3 or 4 where they were going to talk.
Well, yeah, because that was supposed to be part of 4.
Yeah,
The talking. Who I remember, right, all the Okay, so the raptors in Jurassic World, If I remember right, their names are basically the names that were from the original script. I know, like, I feel like Echo was definitely one of them. I don't know if it was Blue or, like, Blue was called Apollo or something that.
Since you said Blue, it reminded me of something I didn't say before. Everything with Blue in Fallen Kingdom, I loved. Yeah. Let's move on to Jurassic World. It's just... It's just a big car commercial. You know, it's such a retread of the first one. I wish they had just gone to Fallen Kingdom.
Well, also, it just doesn't make any sense that, like, oh, it didn't work before, but now it's going to work. If you're going to make the park work, make the park work. Like, that's right. My thing is, like, why go through sort of all this trouble if you're only going to basically have it for this one movie?
Right.
To me, that just doesn't...
You can compare it to The Force Awakens of, like, it's a remake slash reboot slash sequel, because it's like...
But even The Force Awakens, as much as it is like A New Hope, it's still its own movie. Like, I don't feel like it's that... I know that... I was one of the people who complained, like, it is very similar, but compared to, like, Jurassic World, which is literally the same movie, just with... worse, dumber characters.
Yeah, characters that you don't like. The kids aren't just like annoying. They're annoying. They're assholes. The big brother's an asshole, and the little kid's annoying. As much as you care for the kids in the first movie, the kids in the fourth movie are just like, I don't give a shit. Let a dinosaur eat these fucking kids.
I don't care about them. The premise also doesn't make any sense of that. We need to make Indominus Rex because... everyone today is too jaded, or like not just jaded, but like they've seen it before, so they feel like
because it wants to be this clever meta statement about making another Jurassic Park movie, but it makes no sense.
But because, the park is full,
right?
The park is literally like filled with people to the brim, and they're like guest satisfaction is at 90%. Do you know how many people would kill for 90%?
I know,
guest satisfaction. That's not a reason to change.
Yeah. It brings up questions that I have about the very first movie, which is like. Why is it called Jurassic Park? Is it a zoo? Is it a park? Are there rides?
So,
like, what attractions are there?
The first Jurassic Park, like Hammond says, he has the line about it in that lunch scene where he says, you know, when the park comes online, it's just going to have the basic tour that you're going to take, but there will be other attractions that will come online as it goes on, which I think some of which we see in Jurassic World, and like, some of that's kind of cool. Kayaking through the river and there's the, you know, herbivores just drinking. Maybe something like the gyrosphere when they're like going through the field. Yeah.
And again, I don't mean to be plot holey.
No,
but that's
no,
so
enough.
Stupid that you can control it and you like
the, oh yeah, no, they would never do that.
Yeah. Plus that scene has Jimmy Fallon in it and God, I refuse.
Not to pick on him, but
I know, it's like ugh. Yeah, I don't care about the kids. I also, and I'm not somebody who ever says, oh, it's too violent, but some of the deaths in the movie
They're
are
a
too
much.
Violent, I think, for the series.
They're a little much. Like, I was surprised this time. I was like, oh, wow, they're just going to splurt that blood out.
Yeah, and what happens to the PR lady who's, like, on the cell phone?
Oh, my God.
It's actually, like, hard to watch. It's like, what am I watching? Like... you're torturing this character that we're supposed to, what, not like because she's on a phone, because she doesn't like kids? We're supposed to be okay with her being basically tortured? It's horrible.
God. Basically, when people say something is misogynistic, the scene in Jurassic World where Claire's assistant gets picked up by the pterosaur, taken in the air, dropped, essentially like she's tortured, and then all of a sudden as it flies back up, the mosasaur pops up and eats her and the pterosaur.
Ugh.
That is misogyny. Like, it is literally, like, you would only do that to someone you hate.
Right.
And, like, I couldn't believe Colin Trevorrow was very, like, blasé about it. Like, oh, we thought it was fun. It's like, what part about that did you think was fun?
Right.
Were we supposed to enjoy it just because we're watching a human get killed? Like, there's so many different messed up levels to read into that.
It's too far. Like, that would fuck up a kid, I think. Like, I remember...
Yeah.
And this is a good memory, but I remember being really disturbed as a little kid seeing Empire Strikes Back and Han Solo being tortured by Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Torture is a weird thing for a kid to process.
Yeah.
It almost has the bravado of like an 80s slasher movie, like a Jason movie or a Freddy movie, where we're supposed to be like, yeah, cool kill. And it's like, cool kill. Like, these movies were never about like
gore. They were never about the kills. Like,
yeah.
I understand that, like, characters, they died in ways that affected you in the first Jurassic Park, but that's because you cared about them.
Right.
It was not because they were, because of the way they were killed. It's the fact that you cared enough that when they were killed.
Right.
You think about the way that Spielberg does the kills in Jurassic Park, you really don't see much.
No.
Although I do remember, like, as a kid, I was terrified. What scared me the most about Jurassic Park really was the Nedry.
Yes.
Nedry getting attacked by the Dilophosaurus. Like,
he makes Rain
creepy.
Scary. He uses Rain so well in that movie. Still now, when there's, like, a big thunderstorm, I always think a T-Rex is going to pop out of the bushes.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Like,
there's a lot of Jaws in the first movie.
Yeah.
I was surprised rewatching how little you see.
He shows you the Brachiosaurus in about the first 15 to 20 minutes.
Right.
Which, you know, is relatively early in the movie.
Yeah.
You do not see the Tyrannosaurus until an hour plus into the movie.
Yeah, that's what makes that famous image of the water shaking.
Yeah.
What makes that work is, that's like the dun-dun, dun-dun from Jaws. That's representing the T-Rex. Whereas they do that in every other movie, but it's always immediately followed by there's the T-Rex. They don't use the potential of it as a tension-building device.
Mm-hmm.
The very first scene of the very first movie, you don't see anything. You know, where he's like, shoot,
well,
shoot her.
Yeah. You just see a little bit of the raptor as it runs through the cage.
Right.
You do see a little bit, but yeah.
Four.
So, but anyway, yeah, four is a mess. It's a bad movie. It's a dumb movie. You don't like any of the characters. I think also the other thing that bugs me is just how fake it looks.
Mm-hmm.
All of the dinosaurs look really fake. The CGI isn't as good as the movie that was made in the 90s. You know, it's like, even The Lost, and I think The Lost World CGI still holds up.
Even watching the first movie again, I was like, it's not perfect.
It's not
there's
perfect.
There's also more animatronics than you think were being used.
There's only 4.5 minutes of CGI in the original
Jurassic Park. A lot of the T-Rex was built. It was there.
That T-Rex was, for the most part, practical.
Yeah.
There's the part when the T-Rex is looking at the cars. The T-Rex bumps into Grant. You know, it like knocks its head against Grant's car.
Yeah.
That is a practical dinosaur. And then if you notice, the camera pushes down.
Yeah.
And so then it's all framed by the car's window. And then as the T-Rex walk by, it's CGI.
Okay.
So that is an example of, like, that's how you're supposed to do it.
Right. That's a good way to do it.
You see the physical live-action animal push against the car, so you've already bought it, and so then you really buy it when it walks past the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this movie just has none. It has one animatronic.
You mean four or five?
Four.
What's the one animatronic in four?
It's the Apatosaurus that's, like, laying, dying. Like, the Indominus Rex just, like, goes on a kill spree, which also makes no sense either. It's like, oh, it's hunting for sport. And I was like, that doesn't make sense.
Right. There are tons of plot holes if you want to look for them in all of these movies.
But then, anyway, so there's, like, all the Apatosauruses that are just lying dead. And then Chris Pratt goes over to one of them, and he, like, holds its head in his lap.
Yeah.
That one was an actual animatronic, but Everything else is CG.
I don't like Chris Pratt's character. He seems like a watered-down Star-Lord. Like, he's trying to be less funny and more charming. That's the one thing I can't get over. I don't like any of the characters in Jurassic World. When I saw it in theaters, I saw it with friend of the show, Nadia Kader. And when they kiss, because it's a movie, so they have to kiss.
We just laughed
because it felt so unearned and
it's
so
totally
out of nowhere.
Unearned. Yeah, and then it's like, oh, you guys are boyfriend, girlfriend, which then at the beginning of Fallen Kingdom immediately disappears.
Right. What I've learned most from this series is if you've got troubles with your partner, go get stuck on one of these islands because the adventure you have will bring you together. Bring us back to five, which we talked about in the beginning. Another thing I like about five is I like that they pull a bait and switch. I like that you think it's going to be like Lost World, and then that's not the movie it is. It's this other weird haunted house kind of movie.
See, I would have preferred if it was just Lost World. The then weird haunted house.
I love it.
Yeah, no, that for me, I was just like, what the fuck are we doing here?
I want to actually give a shout out to my friend, podcast host, and comedian, John Saluga. He's the host of the Adventure Time podcast. He said about that scene where the dinosaur comes into the room, it's a Draculosaurus, which is a very funny line.
That's the other thing, too, that's like the little girl is supposed to be smart and the dinosaur is supposed to be super smart. So, like, what does a super smart dinosaur do? Like, creepily.
Right.
Like Nosferatu, reach its hand.
Yeah.
dude, just eat her. She's like 3 feet tall. Right, that's what you apparently want to do.
Right, if that's what you want to do.
I presume that's what the Indoraptor wants to do, is eat her, because that's what all these dinosaurs do now, is just eat people.
Just eat people. What do you want from sex?
I don't want them to give me Jurassic War, but I know that's what they want to give me.
Well, what would you want? If you wanted to course correct and have it be a movie that you like.
The course correction is it's already too late. I would have done the park is still open, story about a dinosaur veterinarian. Why wouldn't they do something cool? Like, you know, dinosaurs are integrated into life now. And
like, you don't see tigers in the city. Like, yeah. It would make sense that if they were just out there somewhere.
The story then becomes like, I don't know, people get these and start domesticating them and raising them as pets, because
That'd be cool. Let's go full bananas. Here's my letter to the producers of the next Jurassic World movie. Shit or get off the pot. Go big or go home. You already went bananas with that ending. Go full crazy bananas. Have them talk. Have it be like Gremlins 2. I want an electric dinosaur. I want a dinosaur that looks like Batman. I want a dinosaur that's intellectual and talking about Susan Sontag. Just go fucking nuts with it.
That's
what I want.
You know what? Keep it. And I'll just be at home
Rewatching the original,
or like making other movies about dinosaurs. Yeah.
You've been listening to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. My guest today was Mike Fischetti. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no problem. But like, we can talk about other dinosaur movies.
We'll do another episode other stuff.
All right.
Don't forget to subscribe to the show, to share the show with your loved ones. We are everywhere podcasts are available. We're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're on Google Play. We're on Apple Music, of course. Life will find a way.
Life finds a way.
Go bye-bye.
Bye-bye.